All right, get ready. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Sports Takeover 2019.
Woo!
We hope everyone had a great holiday season, and we are excited to be back. Matt and Chris with you, as always. Let's get started, Chris. College football is where we're going to go first. Yes, the college football season is over, but we haven't had a chance to talk about it in over a month. So we got some stuff to recap, Chris. Let's start with the bowl season before we get to the playoffs. And tell me some surprises to you from the college football bowl season.
All right, so there are way too many bowls, in my opinion. There shouldn't be six and six teams going to all these bowls.
Correct.
I'm not going to focus on any of them. I'm going to focus on some really good teams. Army, not known for their bowl, known for their military. However, this year they went 11-2, capped off by a 70-14 win in the Armed Forces Bowl. Most points ever scored in a bowl game. Ended number 19 in the AP poll, which is the highest in this century that Army has been in the AP poll. 11 wins is the most they've ever had in program history, and this is their third straight winning season. Army, not known for their football, but this year and the past two seasons, they've really made a mark. Another one, which a little bit more bad, the Cheez-Its Bowl. TCU and Cal, final score was 10-7, TCU won. That's not the important part. The important part is that the two teams combined for nine interceptions. They even had three quarterbacks combined for all nine interceptions because they just couldn't be satisfied only having the starters do it. They had to throw the backup in there too to give him some poor reps. And also, Auburn crushed Purdue 63-14. Man, you think they try and match up these teams a lot better. But anyway, they scored 56 points in the first half, which was a record for any bowl game. So definitely some interesting results from those three bowls.
Yeah, that Army game was fantastic, 70-14. I think I picked Army in that game. I don't remember, but regardless, that's not a score that I thought was coming. That's crazy.
I know I picked Houston.
Wisconsin and Miami, both 7-5 in the Pinstripe Bowl. 35-3 was the final in favor of Wisconsin. So not much of a game there at all. The Peach Bowl, number 10, Florida, number 7, Michigan, 41-15 in favor of Florida. Also a game that I thought would be close that was not a game at all.
Definitely.
Here's the fun one, Chris, LSU and UCF. Ugh. It was a good game. I got to give UCF a little bit of credit. It was a good game. It was 40-32 that they lost. I've been calling for a loss all season, and I finally got it. Close. It was close. They didn't have their starting quarterback. I give them some credit, but at the same time, they finally played a team that was ranked. LSU was number 11, and they couldn't handle it. I know they didn't have their quarterback. I know it was a close game, but they finally lost. And then the Sugar Bowl was, for me, maybe one of the most surprising games.
I think the biggest, actually.
Number 15, Texas, and number 5, Georgia. We both picked this game on the show, said Georgia would win, and we were pretty convinced that Georgia would win. Texas was pretty convinced otherwise. 28-21 was the final. Sounds a little bit closer than it actually was. I think Georgia scored their third touchdown with maybe less than a minute to go. So kind of a garbage time touchdown for Georgia. But yeah, surprising result. I thought that might have been a wider margin in Georgia's favor, and very much was not.
Yeah, the one funny thing about Georgia too, so that game took place after the college football playoff. Some of the players on Georgia were tweeting, oh yeah, the top four teams, they're the ones that got in. Yeah, sure, right. Well, I don't think that all the players on Georgia were committed to their bowl game since they got snubbed, and they clearly did not handle Texas, who was reared up, ready to go. Texas back to 10 wins. Good for them. Texas is back. You mentioned Miami. They lost 35-3. At one point at the end of last season, they were 10-0, ranked number 2, looking to be a college football playoff team, maybe even a national championship contender. They now finish this season 7-6 after starting off last season 10-0. Two straight bowl losses. The U was claimed to be back last year. They had the turnover chain. The U is not back. Stay tuned to see where they develop. And one more bowl game that we didn't discuss, but one that I think shows that the top four were not selected. Number 6, Ohio State, handled number 9, Washington, in the Rose Bowl, 28-23. Dwayne Haskins going out on a very high note for Ohio State, ending with over 50 touchdowns. Great mark for him. Good for Ohio State. They did not get in, and we saw some teams that did get into the college football playoff that did not put up a good matchup. Huh, Matt?
Oh, man. The college football playoff was so disappointing. And, I mean, every year it seems like there's one game that really the underdog isn't in. And this year it was both of them. Clemson, Notre Dame especially. I put some faith into Notre Dame. I liked them all season. I thought maybe I'd give them a go when we picked our playoff bracket. I should not have. They lost to Clemson 30-3 in their semifinal. On the other side, Alabama and Oklahoma. Final score looks close. It was 45-34, but Alabama jumped on top early. Oklahoma was playing catch up the entire time. It really was never as close as the score suggests. So you're really looking at two games that are hyped up all season long, and then they just kind of let you down. It was disappointing.
Well, I think everybody kind of expected the Oklahoma game to be a high score. I mean, Oklahoma has one of the worst defenses in all of college football this season, let alone out of ranked Power 5 conferences, whatever. Sure, they were sure. In the hundreds. So Alabama ranked in the top 10 in offense, as we discussed. You expected them to give up a lot of points, but still, that's 45 is bad. I think they were down 28-0 or 28-7 early.
So it was something like that. It was out of hand early.
Yeah, it was out of hand in the first half. Obviously, Kyler Murray and Tua put up good games, but still, they did not put up any kind of contest. Notre Dame, 30-3. You know, Notre Dame has appeared – they've appeared in a myriad of bowls over the last 20 years or so. But out of the BCS, College Football Playoff, and New Year's Six bowls, they have gone 0-8 in their last eight appearances in them. That includes a national championship loss to Alabama, I believe, in 2012. This year they lost the College Football Playoff. They've had some, you know, Fiesta Bowls, Sugar Bowls thrown in there. Their last win, I think, I saw was 1993 in the Sugar Bowl against Alabama.
I didn't realize it had been that long.
I mean, they won regular bowl games in between them, but, you know, the ones that actually matter, they cannot compete. So maybe the College Football Playoff Committee will finally understand, Notre Dame doesn't schedule good teams. This year they only played two ranked opponents, that being Michigan and Syracuse, neither of whom obviously were extremely strong. I think it's finally time for Notre Dame to stop being included in the playoff.
Possibly. And before we get to the championship game, we've talked about the possibility of the College Football Playoff being expanded. And I know you're kind of in favor of that. I would like to see that too. These kind of games don't help that argument. Because when you have the 3 and the 4 seed get in and get demolished by the top 2, there's no way that the College Football Playoff Committee is going to want to include 8 when you don't even have a good game between 2 and 3 or 1 and 4. Not to say that one of those teams couldn't have done better than these two teams did. Not to say that if you play these games over again, you're going to have the same result. But when people call for an 8-team, a 16-team playoff, and you have the 3rd and 4th ranked team in the country putting up no fight at all, that's going to be impossible to get that argument across and get that playoff expanded.
Yeah, you make a really good point there. I am very strong in favor of moving the 8. The committee has spoken. They said it's too early for us to move, so it looks like we're going to be situated with 4 teams for the foreseeable future. I like to see 8, but you said it. Whenever the 3 and the 4 are not putting up any contest, it's really, really hard to convince the College Football Committee that we need to add 4 more teams, because theory would say that if these were the top 4, well, who's to say that when number 1 plays number 8, it wouldn't be a 50-0 blowout or something?
Exactly.
Now, yeah. Of course, you have different dynamics when you have different seeding. I do think if it was expanded to 8, that teams would be ranked differently based upon what matchup the College Football Playoff Committee is would try to assemble. Because right now, we just rank the top 4 based upon who they think the top 4 skilled are, but the 1-8 right now would have been Alabama-UCF. I don't really know that they actually would have included UCF in this based upon the matchups they would have wanted. They probably would have opted to include a team like Florida was at 10, or Washington was at 9. They might have included them in there, seen a more favorable matchup. But definitely when the 3 and the 4 get blown out as bad as they do, it doesn't really lead to that great of a atmosphere.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I never really considered them actually matching up teams almost when they're doing that, almost like pairing regular bowl games. That's kind of an interesting thought. I personally would also like to see it expanded to 8, but this doesn't help that.
And lastly, let's not forget about the national championship game, where the Sunshine Kid Trevor Lawrence helped lead number 2 Clemson to a dominating 44-16 defeat over the almighty Nick Saban, Alabama. So that's Clemson's second title in the last 3 years, and they're the first team to go 15-0 in a season since 1897. A great year for Clemson.
It's a fantastic year for Clemson, and not only did you beat Alabama, you destroyed Alabama. It was 44-16. And personally, I like seeing Alabama lose just because I like seeing some diversity in who's at the top of college football. Granted, Clemson's won in recent years, and they've been in the final. But at the same time, it's nice to see that team that just hung around at number 1 all season long finally lose. But at the same time, it still wasn't a game. None of these games really lived up to what we wanted them to be and what people made them out to be. So good for Clemson. Fantastic year for Clemson. Nice to see that juggernaut in Alabama go down again, but not really a good game.
No, and the other games that Alabama and Clemson have had, that's their fourth year they've matched up in the playoff. Right. 2 were for a championship. Those were one-score games. I believe last year's game, not for the championship, but that was still a one-score game as well. So they've had a history of being very competitive with each other. But this year, it was just all Clemson. And it was so bad for Alabama that they forced backup quarterback Jalen Hurts to want to transfer. He is now going to be the starting quarterback at the University of Oklahoma in the 2019 season. That's very interesting too in itself, isn't it?
It's very interesting. It would be nice to see an Alabama-Oklahoma rematch
Tua
at some point
Jaylen.
Along the line. Yeah, wouldn't that be interesting?
Yeah, and it's great for Oklahoma. They now go from Heisman Baker Mayfield to Heisman Kyler Murray. Probably not Heisman Jalen Hurts.
We'll see.
He's interesting, though.
We'll see.
Not a bad quarterback. So that's the end of the college football season. Unfortunately, not a great playoff, but a great season overall. Congrats to Clemson Tigers on a great win.
That's right. Moving right along now, we're going to go to the National Football League. And again, we have a lot of catching up to do. So let's look at how the regular season panned out. We were most of the way through it when we left, but not the whole way through it. So obviously the Chiefs and Patriots clinched the byes in the AFC. Houston and Baltimore end up winning their divisions. The Chargers and Colts get in as the wild card, with Pittsburgh and Tennessee finishing as the first two out, 9-6-1 and 9-7 for those two teams. In the NFC, the Saints and Rams, as expected, got the byes. Chicago right there, Dallas right behind them held on in the East. Seattle and Philadelphia get in. Minnesota loses out on the last day of the regular season. They finish 8-7-1. Some surprises there. What do you think about how things panned out at the end of the regular season?
Definitely some a lot of surprises. Indianapolis, I think, is the biggest. This is Andrew Luck's first year back. He missed all of last 2017 season, did not play a single down. The Colts started 1-5. People are like, all right, yeah, this is what we expect the Colts to be. A lot of young guys, Andrew Luck, not full performance. They turn a 1-5 record around, go 10-6, make the playoffs on the last day. It was a competition between them and the Titans. They were the Sunday night game. Winner of the game gone in as the wild card. Loser of the game, well, they watched from home. Indianapolis dominated that game. Of course, Marcus Mariota did not play for Tennessee, which was troublesome for them. But still, Andrew Luck looked very solid. They even then went to Houston and won the first round. We'll get into that a little bit later, but good for Indianapolis. Steelers and the Vikings, man, oh man, what major disappointments they were to the entire NFL. Those two teams were picked at the beginning of the season to be potential Super Bowl threats.
That would be me, yep.
Yeah, you picked them both particularly. I thought the Steelers could have made the Super Bowl, not necessarily the Vikings. Kirk Cousins really is a disappointment for them, too. You can't give a guy $80 million and only have him lead your team to 8-7-1. Dalvin Cook did miss some time earlier in the year, but they have a strong defense, and Cousins did not get the job done. And the Steelers, 9-6-1, that's a horrible, horrible season for them. They were 13-3 last year, got knocked out in their first game, unfortunately. This year, people thought, all right, they're better than before. Drama with Le'Veon all season. More recently, drama with AB. We're going to keep away from that, though. But still, a lot of drama on the team. Should not have made the leaps and strides they did. And Seattle's another team that has surprised me a lot. I thought they were maybe a 5-6-win team going into this year. It's basically Russell Wilson and a ragtag group. But they have a very strong rushing offense. Their defense is anchored by Bobby Wagner, who is one of the best inside linebackers in the league. Managed to finish 10-6 with three losses coming to the Rams and the Chargers. So not a bad season for them. Unfortunately, got knocked out in the first round, but definitely good for them.
Yeah, for sure. Chicago is another big surprise. Not as big a surprise because they kind of got to the top and stayed there all season. But boy, if you would have told me at the beginning of the season that the Chicago Bears would be 12-4, I wouldn't have believed it. They had a fantastic season. Baltimore surprised me a little bit. Not that I thought Baltimore was going to be a bad team, but I certainly didn't think they would win that division. Tennessee surprised me a little bit. Again, if you would have told me at the beginning of the season that there would be two teams from the AFC South, would not have guessed Indianapolis would be one of them.
No.
Honestly, Indianapolis would have been my last guess. I would have picked any of the other three over Indianapolis. So surprising a little bit for me that Tennessee didn't get in. Good for Indianapolis in getting in. Kansas City, 12-4. Again, they've been hot since the start, so you kind of forget about it. But I don't think the expectations were that high for them. Maybe high, but not 12-4 playoff AFC playoffs go through Kansas City high. So good for them there. Dallas surprised me as well. And Philadelphia, credit to Philadelphia for clawing their way back in. The defending champs did not want to be left out.
And the thing about Philadelphia is the end of the season, Carson Wentz was not playing at all. He had a back injury, so they had to go to last year's Super Bowl hero, Nick Foles, to help lead them back to the playoffs. Nick Foles, what a guy. Yeah, he just manages to get the job done no matter the situation. You didn't have any faith in Philadelphia in the middle of the season. I didn't either. There was a
I had a little faith in them. I still said they'd get in. I thought they'd win the division for most of the season.
Okay.
I still believed in them a little bit.
I didn't believe in them. There was a game, Sunday night game. Dallas was 4-4. Philadelphia was 3-5. If you would have told me that both of those two teams would have gotten in the playoffs at that Sunday night game, boy, I would have had a hard time looking you in the face and been believing you. Obviously, I was wrong to think that, though. They both managed to get in. The thing, though, is that Washington definitely had a good chance to get in. Alex Smith breaking his leg, Colt McCoy doing the same thing, did not help their odds at all. That was the end. It was
crazy. That's horrible luck. That's just crazy.
And Alex Smith's coincided with 30 years after Joe Theismann broke his
Which is really weird.
Yeah, it's a little creepy.
It's really creepy.
But yeah, it's unfortunate for them. Kansas City, they have tied Alex Smith. Last year, they did great with him. This year, they said, no, we're going to move on to Patrick Mahomes, who I had absolutely no idea what this guy was going to bring to the table. Certainly not a 50-touchdown, 5,000-yard season.
No.
I expected the Chargers to win in the division. The Chiefs, I didn't even think we're going to make the playoffs, let alone sniff them. They are the top seed now because of the play of Patrick Mahomes. So a lot of credit to him. A team that didn't make the playoffs but did make huge strides, Cleveland, 7-8-1 this season. Last year, they were defeated 0-16. That's the first time they've had 7 wins since 2014. They are definitely on the upswing. This was a great season for them. Look out for them in the future.
100%, yeah. So that's the regular season. Let's go to the wild card round now. Here are the scores from the first round of the playoffs. Indianapolis 21, Houston 7, ooh, Dallas 24, Seattle 22. Chargers 23, Ravens 17, and the Eagles 17, and the Bears 16. I would say that those games were much better than the games we saw in the college football playoff.
Yeah, the Indy game wasn't really that close.
No.
The Chargers game wasn't tremendously close. Baltimore got a late touchdown, but Dallas game was close throughout the whole way, and so was the Eagles game. It's very funny about the Eagles and Bears. So the last game of the season, the Bears played the Vikings. If they would have lost the Vikings would have gotten in the playoffs. Because they beat the Vikings, they were matched up against the Eagles and ended up losing. I just find that kind of ironic that the Bears win actually hurt them
in a way.
But Houston, they just did not show up. And a lot of credit to Andrew Luck. He did what he needed to do. But I think all of these rounds, we kind of saw the experience of the quarterbacks was what propelled them. Andrew Luck is more experienced than Deshaun Watson. Prescott and Wilson, they're pretty much the same level of experience.
I would say that's maybe an exception, yeah.
Yeah. But Seattle is not exactly the greatest team on paper.
No.
Rivers obviously has so many more years on Lamar Jackson. And Nick Foles, not really a ton, but one great ride last year helped throw him past Trubisky. And Cody Parkey's double doink off the post helped seal the Bears' fate.
Poor guy. It was blocked. Barely. There was a fingertip on it.
There was one finger.
There was a finger, enough to make him feel maybe a little bit better about himself. But at the same time, man, that's disappointing. That's a tough loss for them. The Chargers-Ravens game was kind of sloppy. I don't know that there was really, I don't know. Like you said, they scored late to make it a little bit more of a game, make it seem like more of a game than it actually was. The Colts game was over at halftime. They were up 21-0. Texans never made anything happen. Then Dallas-Seattle was a good game.
Yeah, Jankowski's injury hurt Seattle a lot.
Oh, for sure.
Sebastian Jankowski, the kicker for the Seahawks, attempted like a 59, 58. It was
a pretty long
field goal to end the second half.
Especially for a guy that's been around as long as he has.
Yeah, he's about like 60 years old. Anyway, he missed the field goal, pulled his hamstring on the play. So he was out of commission for the whole second half. So they had to rely on their punter, Michael Dixon, to do the kicking duties, which he's the punter. He's not a kicker. He was practicing kicks on the sideline. It looked like if you would put me on a tee there, he was not accurate at all. So it forced Seattle to change their game plan. He had an onside kick attempt late in the game, which looked like he just kicked the ball right to him.
It looked like he punted it halfway down the field, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just hard for them. The onside kick problem is a big problem right now in the NFL, though. They changed the rules on kickoffs to make it more safe. You can only line up 5 on each side of the kicker. So you used to be able to stack like, 8 on one side, 3 on the other. Give yourself a good favorable opportunity to get the ball. You also can't get a running start anymore. So not allowing this pretty much makes it so that you have to sprint 10 yards downfield and hope the ball hasn't landed in their arms yet, which I haven't seen a successful onside kick this year.
No, and it's not like that was an easy play before. It's an impossible play now. It's like they want to get rid of kick returns. It'd be like punting straight or kicking it straight out of bounds as a touchback. Like you can't make it any more difficult.
Right.
It's already a difficult play, and they just make it worse. Divisional round. Some interesting games here. Kansas City 31, Indianapolis 13. Not really a great one there. The Rams 30, Cowboys 22, Patriots 41, Chargers 28, Saints 20. Eagles 14. So some close ones there, some not so close ones. The AFC playoffs were disappointing, I thought.
Yeah, well, I would pick Indianapolis. Actually, I thought they were going to be able to ride the wave. I don't believe in Kansas City. I still don't. Haven't for many years. Mahomes believes in them, though. 31-13, they were pretty much in control the entirety of the game. The Colts had nothing going in the first half. I don't think they got – did they get a first down in the first half? If they did, maybe – might have been the last drive of the first half they got a first down on. But Adam Vinatieri missed a field goal, missed an extra point. Not that that made a difference in the long run. But still, you just hate to see these kind of things happen to the team. Kansas City played a really dominant game. And then you also said the other AFC game, Patriots 41, Chargers 28. That was a blowout. It was 35-7 at halftime.
Yeah. Oh, that was done. That was done maybe in the first quarter.
Yeah, Tom Brady looked like he was still little Tommy from 2004 throwing the ball around. Nothing was going on there. Sonny Michel, rookie out of Georgia, over 120 yards, three touchdowns on the ground. Great game for him. He's a very good running back. Good for the Patriots to have. Phillip Rivers just, he can't get it done against Tom Brady.
No, 0-8 now in his career, I believe, against Tom Brady. That was a disappointing game. I really thought the Chargers could give the Patriots a run for their money, but they were really never in the game. The NFC games were a little bit closer. The Rams and the Cowboys was an 8-point margin, which surprised me. I would have picked that one maybe to be the biggest blowout of the four. So credit to Dallas for hanging in there with a really good Rams team. And then the Saints and Eagles turned out to be really good. 20-14, Philadelphia threatened late, and Alshon Jeffrey let it slip right through his hands. Do they score? Who knows? But, man, that's a tough way to end a really good game if you're the Eagles.
Yeah, the Rams and Dallas game was actually close throughout. Like, it wasn't that Dallas right. got a late touchdown. I mean, that game was, you know, one score pretty much the entire game. Rams beat Dallas at their own game, though. C.J. Anderson and Todd Gurley both had over 100 yards on the ground. Ezekiel Elliott was rather quiet, so the Rams' rushing was what propelled them to the victory. Dallas didn't really have an answer. Dak Prescott played a pretty good game, I thought. But still, the Rams, everybody knew, were the better team of the two. But Dallas definitely hung in there. And you mentioned it, Alshon Jeffrey literally and figuratively let it slip right through his hands. He's one of the most sure-handed receivers in the league,
yes,
too.
He
He's
is.
Been praised for not really dropping the ball very much. You probably throw him up there with DeAndre Hopkins as best hands, but on their last drive in the end of the fourth quarter, perfect pass to Alshon Jeffrey, slipped right through his hands, right into Marshawn Lattimore, who was waiting right behind for the interception. Saints have gotten lucky twice this year on last drive in the fourth quarter turnovers, once being in the Pittsburgh game where Juju fumbled it, and now in the game where the Eagles were driving downfield. I mean, they looked like they were ready to score.
They did.
They weren't exactly in the red zone at that point. I believe it was like about the 35, but they definitely looked positively on the move. Looked like they were trying to at least get to the end zone. It would have been very interesting to see how it happened, but unfortunate for Alshon Jeffrey and Nick Foles.
So we look ahead to the championship games, and I would like to point out my bold prediction came true. I said these would be the four teams on our last show, and these are the four teams, and it's strange to see the top two seeds on both sides of the bracket in the championship game. I don't feel like that happens very often. But the AFC championship game will be the New England Patriots at the Kansas City Chiefs. And the NFC Championship game, the Rams at the Saints. Both of these matchups are rematches from the regular season. What are your thoughts?
So earlier in the season, the Patriots and Chiefs played Week 6, and New England won 43-40. There's a big, lot of big differences between this game and that game. And for Kansas City, that game, they still had Kareem Hunt. He accounted for 185 yards of offense that game. He's a huge factor if you take out that Chiefs offense, and they still lost that game too. I don't know that Damian Williams can exactly put up those kind of numbers. This is New England's eighth straight. Yes, eight.
Unbelievable.
Eighth straight AFC Championship game. They've been here before. Bill Belichick just acts like, oh, it's another game. It's the AFC Championship game. Right now, Kansas City is a three-point favorite. The over-under sits at 54.5. I don't know that they're definitely going to reach that over-under, though, because the weather is about to be frigid. It's going to be about 5 degrees for the entirety of the game. Probably will dip down to close to zero. So I don't know that the air attack, which obviously Kansas City thrives on, is going to be valid for how hard the ball is going to be. Might have to go on the ground more. Be a tough trenches game, though. Interesting to see what happens in the frigid tundra there at Arrowhead Stadium.
Yeah, the temperature certainly makes it interesting, but at the same time, the Patriots are used to this weather as well. If this was the Chargers coming to town, that might be a different story, but the Patriots have played through this. We won't make picks yet. We're going to make our picks later, but I certainly think it's going to be a good game. It was 43-40 in the regular season at New England, that in favor of the Patriots. You talked about Kareem Hunt not being there. That's a huge blow to the offense for Kansas City. Like you said, they put up 40 points in the first meeting and weren't able to come away with the win. Now, without Kareem Hunt, that'll be interesting for that offense, especially when the defense isn't there. That's a defense that Tom Brady can pick apart. Not that Mahomes can't pick apart the Patriots defense as well, but that's going to be tricky when your offense is now more one-dimensional than it was the first time. A couple interesting notes for the Patriots. They have not won a road playoff game since 2006 when they went to San Diego and did so 24-21. Thought that was interesting. Brady and Belichick have combined for 38 playoff games in their careers.
Unbelievable.
8 in the Super Bowl, 23 at home, where their record is 20-3. 7 on the road, where their record is 3-4. Not that they've been bad on the road, but they're below 500. I think as you would expect for a team to be in the playoffs. But the point is they are fantastic at home. They're not at home. We'll see what that does. Arrowhead's usually a pretty tough place to play. Just a couple interesting notes that I was not aware of until just this weekend.
Yeah, you mentioned the Chiefs defense can be picked apart. They stood the test though last week. They only gave it 13 to the Colts. They looked very strong for most of the game too. One of their defensive tackles, I forget the guy's name, but he's having a monster season. Should have been named to the Pro Bowl, was not. So look for him to make trouble in the backfield. But yeah, their defense really is the make or break in that game. And the road playoff record is not surprising, 3-4. I mean,
right, it's average.
Hard to play on the road in the playoffs.
Sure, yes.
But I know, I believe two of those victories actually came in Pittsburgh, too.
They did.
Yeah, in 2001, 2004.
AFC Championship games, yep.
Yeah, so tough environment for New England. Exciting to see how that game goes. Moving on to the NFC. But we said before, the Rams and the Saints played earlier in the season. Week 9, the Rams lost to the Saints by a final score of 45-35. High-scoring affair, much like the other game. In that game, Drew Brees had 346 passing yards, 4 touchdowns. Michael Thomas, monster game receiving, 12 catches, 211 yards, and 1 touchdown. On the flip side for the Rams, Jared Goff had 391 yards, 3 touchdowns, 1 pick. And Brandon Cooks had 6 catches for 114 yards and 1 touchdown. A lot of offense between these two teams. Are we going to see it again this week?
Oh, I think we're going to see a fantastic, close, high-scoring football game. Here's the matchup I'm interested for. You talked about Michael Thomas and the monster game that he had. Guess who did not play? Aqib Talib. He was on the IR. He's back. We'll see what that brings. On the other side of the ball, the Rams had Cooper Kupp, wide receiver, one of Jared Goff's favorite options. He's not there. He had 5 for 89 and a touchdown in that first meeting. So if you're the Rams, you lose a piece on offense, you gain a piece on defense. We'll see if he can slow down Thomas. I don't know if he can. Drew Brees had a fantastic game. He might have to repeat that for them to win, but I think this is going to be fantastic.
Yeah, and also the Rams also have added C.J. Anderson, second running back. Now, the problem with that is the Saints have one of the best rush defenses in the entire National Football League. In the first matchup, Todd Gurley, I don't think, had 80 yards in that game. So you do add another dynamic there in the backfield, but it is very hard to run against the Saints defense. You mentioned there's no more Cooper Kupp. They've kind of adapted without him. I don't say they're any worse of a team than with him. Obviously, he is a great player for them to have on offense, just another tool. But when you have a Robert Woods, you have Brandon Cooks, you have Todd Gurley, you have a lot of options for Jared Goff there. C.J. Anderson now is another one you can throw in the mix. So I don't think that the ball will not be spread around even without Cooper Kupp. A little bit of a blow. I do like the Aqib Talib on Michael Thomas matchup, though. Marcus Peters is not a great cornerback. He is not the guy I think that...
Not against Michael Thomas, he isn't.
No, he's not the guy I don't think the Rams thought they were getting from Kansas City when they traded for him. He's kind of on the downswing, in my opinion. He looked a little shaky last week in some coverage plays against Amari Cooper. They have a spat before, but he's not the best. I think they really need to put Aqib Talib on Thomas to stop him. But Drew Brees always has a habit of finding random receivers and tight ends you don't know about to get him for touchdowns. Benjamin Watson had a touchdown in that first matchup. They also have Kamara and Ingram in the backfield. That's a better dynamic threat, I think, than Gurley and Anderson are.
Easy.
Yeah, Kamara is basically a second receiver who can also run the ball very well. Very interesting to see what happens there. New Orleans is currently the 3.5-point favorite. Over-under sits at 56.5.
It's going to be all about the offense. Top four offenses in the playoffs so far. Top four scoring offenses from the regular season. It should be points, points, and more points this weekend.
So certainly some exciting games coming up. As we mentioned, we'll get those picks in later. But right now, we're going to take a quick break. Coming up, we have some NHL and NBA season, kind of seeing where we are right now in the month of January. So please stay tuned.
Welcome back to Sports Takeover, Matt and Chris. Moving along from football now, we're going to look at the NHL first and a progress report on where we are at. What's changed in the last month? Let's start with the standings entering tonight. Kind of interesting. Metro, not led by who you would think it is. It's led by the Columbus Blue Jackets, who have 59 points. Capitals also have 59 points. Columbus just happens to have more wins. Then you've got the Islanders with 56 and the Penguins with 56. Atlantic, Tampa Bay leads, which is a surprise to nobody, 74 points. Toronto in second with 58, followed by Boston and Montreal with 57 each. Let's leave it there. What do you think about the Eastern Conference?
So the Metro, typically a close division. I think that Columbus being in first now, good for them. I'm not a fan of John Tortorella or Columbus, but they've certainly been playing some good hockey recently. You could put any of those four teams, I think, at the top. Maybe not the Islanders. The Islanders are very much of a surprise to me. Barry Trotz is a good coach, apparently. He knows how to lead the Islanders without John Tavares to a playoff spot as we currently speak. They sit in third place. But the Capitals kind of have been faltering a little bit lately. They, you know, generally are one of the better teams going into the season. You expect them to be at the top of the division. They are tied, but they're not really commanding their lead. In the Atlantic Division, however, Tampa Bay is commanding every single thing they do on the ice. 74 points through 47 games is ridiculous. Right now, they are on pace for 129 points this season. That would be the most since Detroit had 131 back in 1995-96 season. No team in the salary cap era has eclipsed 129 points where Tampa Bay is currently on the pace for. So if they can keep the pace they're on, which nothing about the way they're playing says anything else. I mean, they have Andrei Vasilevskiy, a Vezina contender, even a good backup in Louis Domingue. And then Nikita Kucherov's doing well. Stamkos is always a threat. Great defense. There are no weaknesses on this Tampa team. 74 is a ridiculous amount to have, but not far-fetched. Montreal is a team that is extremely surprising to me. Montreal has not been a great team the last few years. They make a interesting trade, get rid of Alex Galchenyuk in the offseason, acquire Max Domi, get him sent here from Arizona. Suddenly he finds life, and Montreal is putting the pieces together. I had no expectations for them to do this, but for the fact that they are, good for them. Boston and Toronto, you kind of expected them to be around 2-3. They're good teams, not exactly as great as Tampa. Not bad. They're definitely going to make the playoffs. They're good teams. They're right where I think they should be.
Yeah, Montreal and the Islanders are two teams that I keep waiting for them to drop off. I kind of thought that that's where the Islanders were trending, but they're back, so I guess they're not yet. Tampa Bay, though, is just unbelievable. There's no one, I don't think, within. I think the Flames are within 10 points of them. I don't think there's anybody closer.
Yeah, Flames are 10 back.
So they're just doing whatever they want, and they lead the NHL in all kinds of categories, plus minus. I think they're like a plus 58, something like that. It's insane. They have a pretty commanding lead in that division, and in the Eastern Conference and in the President's Trophy race, anything you want to talk about, they've got it well in control at the moment. In the Western Conference, the Central Division, the Winnipeg Jets lead with 62 points, followed by the Nashville Predators with 60. The Avalanche then have 50, and Dallas and Minnesota are the other two in the wild card spots. Dallas has 50, Minnesota has 49. Pacific Division, the Flames, who we just mentioned, have 64 points. The Sharks have 63 right behind them, and then the Vegas Golden Knights have 60 to round out the teams that are currently in a playoff spot there. Thoughts on the West?
Well, the Central is kind of what I expected. Winnipeg and Nashville are clearly dominant teams. They've been now for two, three seasons. I think those two could flip-flop still by the end of the season, but them two being at the top is not surprising. Large drop-off, too. You mentioned Nashville has 60. Below them, Colorado has 50. So it's basically just between Winnipeg and Nashville. And
yeah,
the rest
it's really a two-team race.
Yeah,
right now.
The rest are vying for wild cards or the third spot, but still, those two, I think, will fight out to the end of the season. Hard to say a winner there. Calgary, though, huge surprise. I know you were high on Calgary going into the season. I wasn't exactly. I maybe didn't think they were going to be so bad. Maybe a wild card team. Certainly not division leading, second in the NHL in points, 64. San Jose right behind at 63. They're a team that I think all of us expected to be near the top. Struggled a little bit earlier on, but now we're riding an 8-game winning streak following their victory last night. Erik Karlsson is turning it on as the player that he was always in in Ottawa. Brent Burns, he's Brent Burns. He does what you expect him to do. Vanner Kane's had some nice games. Joe Pavelski, Martin Jones has been getting win after win. San Jose's a dominant team to look out for. Vegas, too, obviously very good last year. Were the Western Conference representative in the Stanley Cup. Started off this season very, very slow. Have since rebounded, picked up, kind of like the Penguins. Two teams that started slow, made a few changes here and there, now got to the point where they deserve to be at.
Yeah, so I was excited about the Flames coming into the season. I don't know that I thought they'd be leading the Western Conference, but I was excited about them. And I was excited about Johnny Gaudreau, who I thought, I predicted he might win MVP. He's tied for second in the NHL in points right now. The only one better than him is Nikita Kucherov. So Gaudreau and the Flames are having a fantastic season. The Knights have made quite the comeback, and the Sharks have made quite the comeback. The Sharks, as expected. The Knights, somewhat. I mean, I thought they'd be good. We talked about them at the beginning of the season. When they started slow, though, I wasn't necessarily surprised. So good for them for making the comeback here. And you talked about the drop-off in the Central Division. Luckily for them, the rest of the teams in the Pacific are not faring very well because the Central holds both of the wild card spots as it stands right now. So even though there's that big drop-off, we still might see five teams from the Central get in.
The Ducks were a team I thought at the beginning of the year, they are in the Pacific, that they might be one of the worst teams in the NHL. They've actually been in a playoff spot most of the season. However, though, recently in the last month, they were on the heels of a 10-game lose. I think it's – did they win eventually? I know it was at least 10 games.
It was at least – it might have gone to 11.
Either way, they had a stretch where they had lost 10 games without – gone 10 games without a victory. They made a trade. They sent Andrew Cogliano for, I don't know, someone in the Western Conference, just a small piece here and there, yeah, help fix them. Coaching change is not imminent, though, but their team I didn't think was going to be good. They've now finally fallen back to where I think they should be. Currently sit at 47 points, though. They're right in the mix of the race still, don't get me wrong, but I just don't see them having the longevity going forward this season to help keep them in that race for long, especially when you have good teams in the Pacific. They really need to rely on that wild card race not going so hot for them right now.
Yeah, no, I agree with that, and I talked about those teams in the East that I thought would drop off. I thought the same of the Ducks, finally seeing it from the Ducks. Just to have some fun, the teams at the very bottom of the NHL, the bottom five, the Ottawa Senators are dead last with 39 points. The LA Kings end with 40. The Philadelphia Flyers also have 40, and the Chicago Blackhawks have 41. So we have the very top, and we have the very bottom. Just interesting there.
Yeah, Flyers are a team that have gone from now making the playoffs last year to being one of the worst in the league. A lot of coaching changes, player changes there. Not great for them. Blackhawks are a bad team. Kings, they're old. Kings are about 45. Everybody on the single team out on the ice can't keep up with the speed of the NHL. So not a ton of surprises there. I wouldn't necessarily call the bottom teams fun, but...
fun for us, not fun for them.
Right, yeah. Fun for us to talk about, not fun for them. Some points leaders in the NHL, you mentioned Nikita Kucherov leads with 75. He's currently on pace for 131 points, which is insane. That would be the most that anyone's had since Mario Lemieux had 161 in, guess what season? The 1995-96 season, same that one that the Red Wings did so well in. And that would be the most points anybody's ever had in the salary cap era. Sidney Crosby had 120, Joe Thornton had 125 back in 05, 06, 06, 07, that time frame. 131 is a monstrous pace. I don't know that he can keep it up, but currently he's on a great pace for it. Connor McDavid, Johnny Gaudreau, and Mikko Rantanen all sit behind him. So a lot of Western Conference representatives there, and Kucherov. On the goal side, guess who is number one? The great eight, Alexander Ovechkin. He has 33, followed surprisingly by Jeff Skinner with 30, and then John Tavares and Braden Point each have 29. So that's all four people from Eastern Conference there.
Yeah, and that's going to be a good race. It's not a race I think Ovechkin's going to lose, because Ovechkin is hands down the best goal scorer of the generation.
Yeah.
If any of those guys catch him, good for them. I don't think it's going to happen. Kucherov, boy, I would like to think there's enough time that somebody could at least make the race interesting. Not that it's not. It's a six-point gap, but... man, I don't see him slowing down. Team's fantastic. He's made a big push recently. Rantanen's gone in the opposite direction. Not a huge drop-off, but he was leading for the better part of the season to this point. McDavid obviously will make it interesting, but yeah, Kucherov in the lead there. And then we talked about Tampa Bay. 36-9-2 is their record. 36-9-2 plus 58 is their goal differential. So just incredible there. Couple teams trending upwards. We've talked about them, the Blue Jackets, the Penguins, the Sharks, the Knights. All teams kind of with a slower start have surged to the top of their division as expected. Teams going in the wrong direction. You talked about Anaheim. Vancouver was in a playoff spot there for a while.
A fake playoff spot.
Yeah, they're now out of a playoff spot. The Devils had a good start. They're looking more like the team that I think we thought they would be. The Hurricanes and Sabres still hanging in there. The Sabres, I believe, still hold a wild card spot. No, they don't. No, they're the first one out. They're
Canadians
the first one
are
out.
Above them by 1 point.
And the Hurricanes, I think, are just right behind them. But those are two teams that were, I mean, the Hurricanes were on fire at the beginning. The Sabres went on a big win streak there in the middle. So kind of strange to see them trending downward.
Yeah, they're definitely fringe teams that will make it a competitive wild card race. So We sit in January, just past the halfway point of the season, trade deadlines and a little over a month away. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of changes to these teams that we talked about now. So interesting to see where we sit currently.
Yes. Let's move on then to the NBA and do the same thing, progress report, and see where we're at in the standings. And the playoffs are different here. But Toronto leads the Atlantic with a record of 33-12, followed by the 76ers, the Boston Celtics, and then the Brooklyn Nets. Fourth in the division, but in a playoff spot with a record of 22-23. In the Central, we have the Milwaukee Bucks, 31-12 leading there, and the Pacers two games behind them. Southeast then, and this is a disappointing division, Miami Heat lead this division with a record of 21-21. They are followed by Charlotte, 20-23, also in a playoff spot.
Yeah, these two teams are in playoff spots, but there is no contention to be had between these two teams with anybody else in the Eastern Conference. NBA is always like this. Eastern Conference has been notoriously weaker than the Western Conference for some years now. There is usually one or two teams that get in with maybe a 40-42 record, maybe 39-43. Right now, there's three teams that sit at or below 500. Nothing about those three teams indicates that they will do much significantly better to get them a winning record. So these teams will get blown out of the water in the playoffs by teams that are much better than them. Toronto and Milwaukee have been going back and forth all season. Those are two strong teams.
Yeah, they've been really good.
A lot of people thought Boston might be a little bit better than they are. Gordon Hayward hasn't exactly fit in the way they wanted to. Kyrie's had some issues with some things on the team, though. So they're a team with the potential, not all there. Sixers are another team that they got Jimmy Butler, but I don't know that he's necessarily fitting in the way they want him to.
Not yet.
It's a competitive East, though. Right. Without LeBron and the Cavs there, it's really wide open for any of those teams.
It is. Western Conference, the Denver Nuggets lead the Northwest Division 29-14, followed by the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Portland Trail Blazers. In the Pacific, it's the Golden State Warriors, as you would imagine, with 30 wins, followed by both LA teams, the Clippers and then the Lakers. Lakers at 24-21 currently have that last spot in the Western Conference playoff picture. And then the Southwest, led by the Rockets, who have made a nice comeback, and the Spurs, who I think are surprising a couple people at 25-20, also currently holding a playoff spot.
Yeah, well, the Rockets had a very rough start to the season, but they have been propelled by the greatness that James Harden is. He is averaging 34.8 points per game. Second is Steph Curry, who has 29.5. So Harden is averaging more than 5 points per game than the next closest guy. He's put up 30 points, I think, was it the last 11 or 17 games?
Something like that.
Yeah, he's been just on fire. He put up 36 in the first half the other night, ended with 57. Give the ball to the guy, he'll score. Half his shots come from the free throw line. Hey, however the ball gets in the basket, doesn't matter to me. As long as you get it done, you get it done. Golden State's a team. They had some trouble in the middle. Steph Curry was injured for a bit. They've now rebounded, are the first seed again after their victory over Denver. Spurs are definitely a team that really looked like they were kind of done for the great Pop years, but he is a phenomenal coach. He knows how to set his players on the right foot. They are in a playoff spot, only second in the division behind the Rockets, close there. LaMarcus Aldridge had his first 50-point game ever, 56 points in a double overtime victory over the Thunder last week. Great game there. The trade between Kawhi Leonard and DeMar DeRozan in the offseason has worked for both teams. DeRozan is playing very well for the Spurs. Kawhi is playing very well for the Raptors. Seems to have worked out well, so good for them.
Yeah. Some trends here. The Raptors have won 5 in a row, so they're playing really well. And you talked about the Bucks going back and forth with them. Well, they're 8-2 in their last 10, as are the Pacers. So an interesting race there. Some teams trending in the wrong direction. The Detroit Pistons are 2-8 in their last 10. They're not in the playoff picture, obviously. But that record dropped them. They were at 500 before that 2-8 stretch started. So although their record is not good, I think they're like 16-24 or something in that ballpark. 500 might get you into the playoffs. So the fact that they've gone
500.
Right. So the fact that they've gone 2-8 and dropped from 500 is significant. Despite how bad their record is, it might not seem significant, but it is. The Lakers are struggling without LeBron James. That's to be expected. When he comes back, they will be fine. The Clippers have lost 3 in a row. The Celtics have lost 3 in a row. So some interesting trends there in the NBA.
One thing to mention too, the Thunder, they currently right up there in the mix. Russell Westbrook quietly averaging a triple-double once again, 21.7 points per game, 10.6 assists, 10.7 rebounds. He leads all the NBA in assists per game, 21.7, a little bit lower points per game than we're used to seeing out of him, But if he keeps his pace, this will be the third consecutive season in which he will have averaged a triple-double for the whole year. Just incredible the stuff this one guy does for all of Oklahoma City.
Yeah, he also leads in steals per game with 2.6, so add another one on there.
Two-way threat. And we have a few other stats here. Kyle Lowry for the Raptors, 9.6 assists per game. John Wall for the struggling Wizards, 8.7 assists. Anthony Davis averages 29.
He's having a nice season, very nice Anthony season. Davis.
29.4 points per game, good for third. 13.3 rebounds per game, good for third as well.
Also second in blocks per game.
Yeah, he is probably the best center in the league by far, I think.
I would say so.
With DeMarcus Cousins being injured, he is the guy to go to. All really that New Orleans has. Andre Drummond averaging 15 rebounds a game. DeAndre Jordan averaging 14. These guys are like 8 feet tall each, so them getting rebounds like that is not surprising at all.
They don't even have to jump.
No. So definitely some good stuff there. Interesting to see how many teams in the East will end up in the playoffs at or below 500. Good to see what's going to move forward. Now we are going to take another quick break, but after that we're going to have our quick picks and bold predictions, so please stay tuned.
Welcome back. Matt and Chris here on Sports Takeover. Quick picks and bold predictions now, as always. We'll start with quick picks. We got the tally here, Chris. Let's see what we got. 52 and 32 for me, 47 and 37 for you. So we are both doing well. We're both above 500. I got you by a little bit, but it's close.
I'm just happy I'm not below 500.
That's fair, especially after your last week. The bowl games that we picked did not treat you well.
No, not in the slightest. And I'm hoping I can turn around my favors this week.
Well, let's see. Starting the NFL, Rams and Saints. We talked about the matchup. I'm going to go with the Saints. I think this was tough for me to pick. This was the toughest of these seven games for me to pick. But they're at home. Drew Brees is just a fantastic quarterback. He's played well all season. 40-plus point games on the year. New Orleans has 6. The Rams have 2. In a game that could hold a lot of offense, I think that could be the difference maker. I'm going to go with the Saints.
I'm going to have to go with the Rams. I said at the beginning of the season that the Rams would make the Super Bowl. I have the match against the Steelers. We're not going to talk about that right now. But the Rams certainly have every opportunity to win this game. It's only a 3-point or 3.5-point favorite for New Orleans. So people don't think it's going to be that wide of a game. They're correct. It's not going to be a very wide game. I wouldn't be surprised to see the Saints win. I just think the Rams have all the right pieces. Sean McVay is an excellent coach. It's really going to come down to the game plan because both these two teams have. They have great pieces on offense and defense, a lot of talented star players. Who can game plan better? Sean Payton versus Sean McVay. Interesting to see. I'm going to go with the Rams. Moving into the AFC, we have Patriots traveling to the frigid tundra that Arrowhead Stadium will be to play the Chiefs. I don't want to pick the Patriots, but I'm going to. They have done this now for 8 years in a row. They know how to win AFC title games. They have all the experience that KC does not. KC barely wins playoff games, let alone hosting AFC championship games. The Patriots shut down the Chargers last week. I have a feeling that they're going to shut down the Chiefs this week, so I'm going to go with the Patriots.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Patriots too. And I mean, there are some numbers here I think that can back that up, but it's just because it's the Patriots. And as frustrating as that is to say, year after year after year, you've got Tom Brady, who's got Super Bowls all over the place, and you've got Patrick Mahomes, who hasn't even played that many seasons. It's one of those matchups. Defensively, the Patriots ranked 21st, which is actually a good thing because the Chiefs ranked 31st. Scoring offense is in favor of the Chiefs, but scoring defense, that margin's kind of made up by the Patriots, so I'm going to go with the Patriots. Into the National Hockey League, the Jets at the Predators, big battle at the top of the Central Division. I'm going to take the Winnipeg Jets. Special teams, I think, is going to make a big difference. The Jets have the second-ranked power play. It's going to be their offense against that defense of the Predators. I think the Jets have one of the best offenses in hockey. I think the Predators have one of the best defensive cores in hockey. I think it's going to be a great game. I'm going to go with the Jets.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Jets as well. I mentioned in the NHL part that both those two teams are going to be bouncing back and forth between first and second. This is actually the first meeting between these two teams this year. I think the Jets are going to take the upper hand in this one. Pekka Rinne not necessarily been playing super great. Connor Hellebuyck has been playing pretty well recently. I think Patrick Laine might start to get going a little bit. Victor Arvidsson has been doing very well for the Predators, though. 8 goals in 8 games now at the start of the 2019
Patrick
year.
Patrick last night.
Yeah. So he's definitely been playing well, but I think the Jets will just take the upper hand in this one. Going to move into the Eastern Conference, stick in the NHL. We have surprising Montreal Canadiens at the surprising Columbus Blue Jackets. Two teams I don't think either of us necessarily thought were going to be an interesting matchup at this point in the season, but here we are anyway. I'm going to go with the Blue Jackets. They've been playing very well recently. They beat the Capitals the other day to take their first spot. Canadiens aren't a team I believe in. I don't think they have everything that it takes to win. Blue Jackets, unfortunately, I think do have the components to win, so I'm going to take them.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Blue Jackets too. I talked about special teams in the last matchup. I'll do it again. Montreal's are horrendous. They do not have good special teams. Columbus is solid. That can easily make the difference in a game. I'm like you. I just have more faith in the Blue Jackets than I do in the Canadiens. So in Columbus, I'm going to take the Blue Jackets. Into the NBA, Trailblazers at Thunder, a couple teams currently in a playoff position. I'm going to go with the Oklahoma City Thunder. Both are playing pretty well right now. Oklahoma City is 14-6 at home. Russell Westbrook has been fantastic as always. I'm going to take the Thunder.
I'm a big fan of Damian Lillard. I think the Blazers have what it takes to defeat the Thunder. It'll be a close game. Thunder have been playing pretty well recently. I just think the Blazers overall are the better team. I predicted them to win the division at the beginning of the season, so they're going to need to win division games like this against the Thunder if they want to get there. I'm going to go with the Trailblazers. Moving ahead, we're going to go stick in basketball, but move to the college side of it. Got some ACC matchups here. Number 4, Virginia travels to Cameron Indoor Stadium to face number 1, Duke. Virginia is undefeated this year. Duke recently lost to Syracuse. I don't think Duke is going to lose twice in the same week. I think they're going to give Virginia their first loss of the season behind Zion Williamson, who ESPN raved about, unfortunately. He is a great basketball player. I just don't need to see him all the time. However, I do think that he will help propel Duke to the victory.
I'll mix it up and go with Virginia. They have 3 wins against top 25 opponents this year. They are undefeated, as you said. They also have the number 1 scoring defense in college basketball. They only give up 51.2 points per game. They'll be tested, obviously, going to Duke, but I'm gonna stick with number 4, Virginia. One more from college basketball, number 9, Virginia Tech, at number 13, UNC. This is a tough one, I think. I'm going to go with UNC. It's going to be a really good matchup. It's the number 4 defense in Virginia Tech against the number 7 offense in UNC. Virginia Tech is 1-2 on the road. Not a huge sample size, but they struggle. UNC, tough place to play. I'll go with the Tar Heels.
I'm going to go with Virginia Tech in this one, kind of for the same reason I went with Duke. They lost last night to Virginia. Wasn't a close game. I don't think they're going to lose twice in the same week. They do sit higher than UNC in the standings right now. UNC had a wasn't even a top 25 loss. They lost to Louisville last week. They only dropped one position in the AP poll. I'm not a fan of the polls in general. They're not picked very well. But 13 is too high for where they should be. Virginia Tech, I think, is the better team. Tough environment, but I think they are going to come out with the win. Lastly, we are going to go into our bowl predictions. As always, the first one of mine will start in the NFL. NFC Championship game this week, Drew Brees versus Jared Goff, high potent offenses. I don't think either of them are going to throw for 300 yards, though. I think it's going to be a tough, more defensive battle than we're used to seeing, maybe some more rushing, but I don't think either quarterback will throw for 300.
Well, I went in a very different direction. I think all four teams in the NFL playoffs this weekend will score at least 35 points. We talked about both these games being rematches. They all scored 35 points the first time they played. Does that mean it's going to happen again? No, not necessarily. The Chiefs are the only team that averaged 35 points per game in the regular season. They averaged 35.3, but the Rams averaged almost 33, the Saints 31.5, and the Patriots just over 27. I just think the lack of defense from these teams combined with the unbelievable offenses will result in lots and lots of points.
Be interesting to see. My next bowl prediction will move into the NBA. I mentioned James Harden's heroism this year for Houston. Currently sits at 34.8 points per game. I think he will finish the season averaging at least 35 points a game. That is unheard of. Nobody averages, people barely average 30 points, let alone 35. I think Harden just has to be the only guy that they can rely on that offense. I think 35 is in the reach for him, and he will do it.
That would be fun to see. It would just be fun to watch a player continue to play the way he's playing right now. I'm going to look at the NBA playoffs. We talked about how poor the Eastern Conference is, especially compared to the West. And in recent years, we've seen teams with a losing record get into the Eastern Conference playoffs. I think there's going to be three of them this year, which is more than average. I'd say normally there's one or two, if any at all. I think there's going to be three. Brooklyn and Charlotte right now, I talked about, they're both below 500, currently holding a playoff spot. The Miami Heat are 21-21. I think they can win that division. I don't necessarily think they can be 500. Reason being, this division is horrible, and they are the worst team in the division against other teams in the division. So basically, although they lead that division, they can't play against those teams, even though they're bad. Blows my mind. I think there's going to be three of them below 500.
Yeah, that's rough. I don't think any of those three teams, if they do make it under 500, will be any kind of competition for the rest, but it'll be interesting to see if three do. My last one will move into the NHL. Currently this year, there are 55 hat tricks in the NHL. That's across every single player, every single team. Last year, there were 81 for the entirety of the season. I think this year, there will be at least 90 hat tricks in the NHL. It's a ridiculous amount. Hat trick is three goals in a game, obviously. For there to be 90, that would be stupendous. They are currently at 55 through about 47 games played, so I think it's possible.
I'm going to go into college basketball for my last one. Number two, Michigan. I think they will be the number one overall seed when we get to March Madness. They're currently 17-0. They've only had two close games. They won a game by two. They won a game by eight. Everything else has been double-digit, handled the competition. They have two games remaining this season against currently number six Michigan State, so those could be some interesting games. But other than that, I think Michigan will cruise their way to number one overall.
I see you've gone down my path of the long-term bowl prediction.
A little bit.
Thank you for joining.
A little bit. All right, that's it for us. Thanks for tuning in here on RMU Radio. This has been Sports Takeover with Matt and Chris. We'll be back next Wednesday at 8. Good night, everyone.